I noticed when listening to our original interview that I didn't ask you about anti-Semitic attacks in the world, but I must say those attacks perhaps have taken more headlines over the last 7 years. For future visitors to our website, we want to capture this moment in time for them. Some of them will be listening 20 years, 30 years from now, and they can compare the different times. I have a study here, Tel Aviv University's Cantor Center for the Study of Contemporary European Jewry. I'm going to obviously get your thoughts. They talk about many more attacks, a lot of evidence of anti-Semitism going through the mainstream, not just far-right and far-left activists. It cataloged 387 anti-Semitic attacks worldwide and cited among the causing growing fears in Europe and elsewhere linked to mass immigration, economic hardship, opposition to Israel's policies towards the Palestinians, and physical attacks with or without weapons, arson, vandalism, and direct threats against Jews, synagogues, and other Jewish institutions. I'll stop here in a minute, but they cite the deadliest attack ever on Jews in U.S. soil, in which a gunman stormed the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, yelling, "All Jews must die," killed 11 Jewish worshipers. And then a 19-year-old gunman opened fire on Sabbath worshipers in a Southern California synagogue, killing one woman and wounding three other people. Let me just get you started in the conversation, and I can add more from this report. What is going on? Why is this happening with increased activity?
Well, I want you to know that I grew up five blocks from the Tree of Life Synagogue. So that incident was especially painful. My cousin was the immediate past president of the Reconstructionist congregation that meets at Tree of Life. He was in synagogue on Friday evening, but not, thank God, on Saturday morning. Knew all 11 people that were murdered that morning, particularly close to several of them. The other side of that, and then I'll try my best to answer your question, was the rather incredible response of the people of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. People of all faiths and of no faith wanted to do whatever they could to help. And to say that this is not the community that we want Pittsburgh to be. So from the non-Jewish mayor to the imam, people simply rose up to say this can't happen in our midst. And as painful as this tragedy was, we also have to look at, I think, how the community chose to respond. I just was with my cousin, and they now, a year later, are still trying to figure out. It's a challenging situation. Do we repair the Tree of Life Synagogue, which has still the bullet holes and so forth? There are some people who say, "I'll never step foot in that space again. Too many memories." Or do we tear it down and start all over again and so forth? These things have not yet been resolved, and it's a full year later. The larger issue, obviously, where you cite global statistics. Of course, the question has to do with Jews, but also with instances of Islamophobia, of anti-Muslim hate crimes. We still have racial crimes that are hate crimes. And I suspect that there's an increase in the last several years in each of these categories. And what happens in Europe, of course, is in some ways even more politically involved, as people are concerned with change. There are people who find that their world is not the way it was, and they're unhappy with the changes. They're not sure of their employment. Are they going to be replaced by someone younger and more capable of using modern technology, or even replaced by a machine? Their pensions are not secure any longer. Long-time loyalty to a company which will take care of its own, those things aren't there. The increasing cost of higher education, with people coming out of school with hundreds of thousands, not just thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, and not convinced, as I think our generation was, that we're going to have a better life than our parents and grandparents. So there's a great deal of uneasiness about, and that makes it easier for those who are peddling hate, who are looking for a scapegoat, to find the one who is different. And Jews have been, throughout our history, different. That they're the cause of the problem. That's, I think, what is going on today. The other side is, I think I am an eternal optimist. So in the midst of these statistics about the growth of anti-Semitism, the last Pew study showed Jews were the most respected religious group in America. Fascinating. And today, as we speak in February of 2020, two of the candidates for the presidency of the United States of America are Jews. So we've got a mixed bag here today that Jews are able to enter any school, graduate, go on into any profession today. When I was a child, that wasn't true. There were quotas still in colleges, in graduate schools, and certainly there were professional. Look, let me be real blunt. When Nancy and Charles Sherman and children moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1976, there was not a Jewish member of the Southern Hills Country Club, nor a black member, and that's no longer true on either score. Changes have taken place, are taking place. Progress is being made. Are we there yet of a colorblind or totally color appreciative society? No. But my early years of the rabbinate here, the police were raiding gay nightclubs and beating up the peaceful patrons. That doesn't happen today. We have an equality center that is the envy of the country. So one act of hate, be it against Jews or Muslims or blacks or gays, is one too many. But let us not either ignore or discount the progress that is being made.
The report says, to bring you back to the negative side, in the United States, the study noted, among other factors, far-right groups and increasing hostility on campuses toward Jewish students who support Israel as fueling anti-Semitism there on campuses. And this kind of plays into what you said earlier. While far-right supporters often see Jews as a cosmopolitan foreign agent threatening national identity, far-left groups sometimes blame Jews for economic uncertainties and tensions caused by globalization. I think you kind of talked about that.
Right. What's going on campus is particularly troublesome. It's hard sometimes to draw the fine line between anti-Israel sentiment, because as you quoted, the challenge of Israel and the Palestinians, which is a tremendous challenge and not one easily solved. And so there have been those who mobilize against any Jewish speaker or pro-Israel speaker on campus. And it's made sometimes freedom of speech a difficulty on campus, and there are those boycotting products made in Israel and so forth. And they have found on campus students who are trying to understand what's going on in a different part of the world often have been led to believe that one side has all of the evil and the other side all of the good, And that's unfortunate, especially in institutions of higher education, where we hope young people are learning to see grays and nuances and so forth.
Yeah. To show you how top of mind this is from the New York Times, Monday of this week, February 17th. Headline, Anxious Times for Visible Jews as Communities Clash. The article just opens up. A rabbinical student was walking down a quiet street in Brooklyn last winter, chatting on the phone with his father when three men jumped him from behind. They punched his head, knocking him to the ground before fleeing down the block. Then they cite other happenings as well. And one of the rabbis said, we thought the things that happened in Europe would never happen in the United States, and definitely not in New York City. But unfortunately, we were in dreamland. So this is a very current story. Happens there. We don't have that visibility as much here in Tulsa, but it is of concern, of course, there. And increasing in the United States, maybe, from 10 years ago?
Well, I don't know. I suspect yes, but also, and this is your area of expertise, we now have instantaneous news from every corner. So we know a lot more about such incidents than we did even a decade ago. That kind of incident is frightening, and it is deeply disturbing. And what causes an innocent person wearing a skullcap or some other distinctive Jewish garb to be the object of such an attack? I don't know. I mean, here in Oklahoma, we're talking, John, as you well know, about encouraging people to be able to carry guns more openly, more easily. And yet, it's innocent people who are most shot by those guns. So we have some rhetoric going on in this country. There's no question about that. Those who look at our president as being partially responsible for increasing tensions, I think that one can make that case. Certainly, President Trump hasn't been a unifier. If white nationalists, if hate groups feel that it's safer, more acceptable to spew their venom today because of the president, then he has to take responsibility for that. But I don't think that that's the only reason at all that we have such haters. I, again, think we have people who are unbalanced, and we have to do a much better job in terms of identifying sooner people with severe emotional problems, and we have to do a much better job of making sure they can't purchase guns. But we also have to get people to the point where they feel in their own life that they are secure. They don't need anybody to hate. They don't need a scapegoat because they're comfortable within their own skins, within their own homes, within their own communities. So there's no easy solution to hatred, whether it's hatred of Jews or hatred of anybody else. I hope that we will increasingly focus on the causes of people being anxious and insecure and try and meet their needs.
And we can leave the topic on a real positive side. This is kind of like a time capsule for those who listen. The Tulsa community and environs has tremendous respect for the Jewish community and their foundations and what they do. About 2,000 Jews living in Tulsa.
Right.
And those foundations who are making a difference to repair the world is held in high respect by the rest of the community. So it's nice to be able to say that and represent that to the future generations.
I agree, and I appreciate you saying that. Tulsa, you know, would be a different place without the involvement of some of these families who, again, see their role partly exactly what you said, the concept of tikkun olam, of repairing the world, a basic tenet of Judaism, and partly as a way of giving back to a community that has been very good to us. When we're grateful, we try and help make other people as safe and secure as we are.
Well, thank you for doing this follow-up interview. I enjoyed it. I know our visitors will enjoy hearing you.
Thank you, John, for making it possible.
Yeah, we'll do another 5 years and see what happens.
I'm willing if you are.
All right. And so shall I say, as I used to say on the radio when I concluded my program, shalom for now, I used to say.
You did. Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom.